talking about the things that make your home service business go. Marketing, finance, systems, people. This is the Fight Club for Business podcast.
Makes me that much stronger. Makes me work a little bit harder. Makes me that much wiser. Thanks for making me wider.
Awesome. Welcome back to Fight Club, everyone. We're super excited to have you here with us this Tuesday morning. As you know, this is really just a casual conversation to help y'all fight for your business this week and find an area that you can work on to move the needle forward. So we cover four different areas. We've got marketing, finance, culture and people, and then systems. So one of these areas might be an area that you need some, you know, extra advice, some extra help in this week. And we're excited to have our guest Matt with us today to be able to yield some advice from his end and explain ways he's overcome different areas of these topics. So we'll go around, do a little bit of an introduction and jump right into the fun stuff. So my name is Taylor Maroney. I co-own a power washing company in South Florida with my husband, and I'm super excited to be back on Fight Club with everyone. I missed y'all last week.
I know, we missed you.
So kind of give everyone a little bit of an introduction about yourself and your company.
Myself, go ahead. So Matt Ricketts, I own Better Life Maids with my wife, Angela. We founded it about 12 years ago, 2008, 13, coming up on 13 years. I was an airline pilot at the time, so that's my background. And this business took off. I was helping her while I was traveling or working from home, doing a lot of the technical work, building websites, doing the SEO, all that sort of technical aspect. And it actually started to make more money than I was making as a pilot within probably 3 or 4 years. And I was able to leave that and focus on the business full time. We've grown the business to multiple seven figures. Pre-COVID, we were about $2 to $2.5 million, somewhere in that range. And I've shrunk back down a little bit. And it's kind of fun because we get to rebuild and regrow. So it's a challenge again. It was kind of on autopilot there for a while. And that's the new challenge. So again, my background was as an airline pilot. So I used a lot of that experience in operations, in systems, in, the human soft skills that you have as a pilot, believe it or not, it's not all just interfacing with the airplane, it's interfacing with people and difficult people. So I used a lot of those skills to build this business. And my wife's business was HR, background was HR. So we complement each other very well.
I love it. I love it. I feel like I'm learning something new about you, Matt, and that's so fun. And I can totally relate to several of those things that you mentioned about regrowing and fixing your business. My name is Megan Likes. I am the founder of Bookkeeping Academy Online. I educate and empower small business owners to know their numbers so they can live more financially rewarding lives. I also am the owner of Likes Accounting Company, a full service accounting firm where you can outsource all of those nasty accounting tasks that you don't like to have on your plate. And I co-own Jeff Likes Clean Windows and Gutters with my husband, Jeff, also started around 13 years ago in Northern California. We do window cleaning and gutter cleaning. And I'm happy to be here. And Tay, I'm so glad you're back. It's always so weird when you're not here, like the gang's back together. And Matt, welcome to Fight Club.
Thank you.
Hey there, Matt. I'm Michelle Myers, co-owner of Pink Collars, and we do remote services for your home service or field service business. And if you need help with your customer care, phone calls, emails, texts, and chat, that's what we do and help that happen for your company. And I am so grateful that you are here and can't wait to hear about everything you have to share with us today on Fight Club. So welcome.
Thank you.
We have a Facebook watcher saying Matt Rickett equals goals. So somebody aspiring to be Matt. That's pretty cool. Yep. Watching from Kenya. I think that's your friend, Megan. Our friend now. So anyway, I'm Martha Woodward, and I am the co-founder of Quality Driven Software, and I own a maid service in a neighboring state, and I also run a program called Culture First. And welcome to Fight Club, and Matt, thank you for agreeing to join us. Mm-hmm. And if you guys see me, I'm like ducking under the banner, and I'm so just ignore my weird...
We'll give you,
I would have to slouch.
And Martha and I have known each other for a while, but Martha befriended me, kind of finally brought me into like the cool club of like the cleaning industry in the Chicago ARCSI conference a few years ago. And we hung out a lot, and I really miss Martha with all this. I hope we can kind of finally, I'm hopeful that we can finally start getting together again. So,
Yeah.
I miss all my cleaning friends. So hopefully we can be in person and do these things soon.
My husband's on his way to get his second vaccine right now. Woo! So that's awesome. And I see Samantha Snyder says, good morning. Matt was my first coach for the second maid service. So that's awesome. So, all right, Tay.
Are we ready? Round robin here. So I normally handle the marketing side of things, Matt, and I'm super excited to chat with you in regards to a lot of people are getting into busy season. This is the time of year where some people start to pick up a little bit heavier than others. But I was going to kind of talk to you about that until you mentioned that you did some of your SEO and marketing on your own in the beginning.
Sure.
That's something that a lot of people attempt to tackle just to save money, just to cut costs, to be able to allocate funds to other areas of the business that are a little bit more necessary at the moment. What was your approach in that? How did you like initially say, okay, we're going to do marketing and I'm going to figure out SEO?
So it was a lot easier 13 years ago. So there was some like glitches in the formula a little bit where you could gain first page and have pretty high page rank pretty quick. So I early on figured out that YouTube videos at that point were like gold. So we created a bunch of YouTube videos, put keywords and links in them. And our website was punching well above its rank with like a PR of like 5 for a local web page.
Wow.
So somehow, yeah, that's kind of now it's kind of come down to a 4. But for somehow we were able to, you know, build a lot of backlinks and create a lot of content early on that got us a lot of early push. You can't do that as easily now. There's really no one thing. We built a huge Twitter following in St. Louis by focusing on local events on our Twitter page and like posting links to all like what was going on in St. Louis and you'd rather be cleaning. And we would share them there with, you know, with constant links. And Twitter had, again, an outsource effect on SEO at the time. So obviously building backlinks, there still are some tools. You can kind of search for some DIY SEO tools which will help you evaluate what your competitors are doing and links and try and get links on similar pages. Moz Local, we use a service that's really pretty straightforward that makes sure that all of our our citations and rankings on all of the I'm thinking of the right words. They're basically
directories.
Yeah, so we use a service to make sure all of our listings are up to date on our directories. And honestly, my biggest strategy that I can tell anyone right now is to get reviews and be good at getting reviews. If you want to affect your SEO in a very positive way, have good customer reviews and then share those reviews on your social media with links back to your page and things like that. So, that's a simple strategy that can pay some dividends. But getting reviews will help you dramatically. And really the game has changed so much because of local that, you know, where we used to have a national presence on search, which we still do. Like you would search Greenhouse Cleaning St. Louis or Greenhouse Cleaning, and we would show up all over the country because we were like one of the first people to do that. I don't know that search term has the same juice that it did before, but local search has made the game a little bit more level, but it also means you probably have to pay for some marketing, some things like the, what's the Google, the top bar with the Google Verified. I'm not sure what it's called now. They change the name so often.
Yeah, the Google Local Service is right.
So, I mean, you can affect your placement a lot more with paid search now than you could back then. And I think Google Local Services would be a place that I would invest some money in as a business starting up versus spending an inordinate amount of time on SEO, because the amount of lift that it takes to affect that is significant, where you can probably benefit more from some paid things like that rather quickly. And obviously getting some reviews.
Yeah, absolutely. That's something I know it's scary for a lot of business owners to make those types of investments, but you said it, you hit it directly on the head. You know, SEO takes time. And as you can say, you've been in business for a little over 13 years. You guys put efforts into SEO way before some people that are just now starting businesses even thought about having a business. So your efforts have now shown twofold, and you've been able to adapt to the ever never ending changes that Google consistently does to us. I mean, every business owner I talk to that has been doing SEO for that long has had to make drastic changes in order to effectively stay within Google's guidelines. So if you're looking to start marketing right now and you're looking to bring in those leads, Matt's absolutely right. If you have a way and a source to be able to put funds towards a Google Local Service campaign or even a Google Ads campaign, that's a paid lead generation source that's going to yield leads and going to yield results. It's just making sure that you have the effective sales process on the back end to be able to handle those leads coming in and effectively close those leads as well. So that's the other piece that I feel like a lot of people within marketing don't tend to always talk about, is what is your sales process? Do you have the ability to close these people once we start sending you these leads? Because if you don't, then that's an area that you might want to take a little bit more focus on before you go jumping in spending that money, because it could all be a waste for you if you're not ready for it.
And that's something that actually, so to Michelle's business, we actually had a, before we could hire our first full-time manager, we obviously had a company like hers taking calls for us and making sure that as leads came in, that they were answered, because we had small kids. You know, our youngest was just born, maybe a year old when we started our business. She's 14 now. So yeah, we couldn't be, you know, having a crying baby while we were taking calls and things like that. So yeah, I think that hits on the head too. That second step is, if you're not going to be able to take those calls, you know, hire a company or outsource that. We obviously did, and that was a big step for us. And they booked appointments for us to go do on-site estimates when we first started. We don't do that anymore, but at least, you know, we closed that sales loop right away with someone else taking those calls for us.
Exactly. Absolutely.
13, 14 years ago, what we did, you know, but yeah, this is a walk back memory lane a little bit.
Well, it's good.
I have a question that I know is asked a lot. Uh-huh. Is where do you like for your conversion percentage to be, your lead to close conversion?
You know, so I look at this pretty regularly. And so, you know, we get a ton of leads online. And so a lead is just a lead. It's just some sort of person, you know, that's given us some contact information, right? I want to quote at least 50 to 60% of the people that I get a lead from. That's our goal, is to get a hold of at least, let's say, half of them. And then be able to close some sort of business with half of those. So it hovers around 26% for us, which might be lower than some, but our pricing is high. So for me, 26% pays the bills. So we're at about a 26% lead to some sort of business. Now, that's not all recurring. That's, you know, because the way we track it is, if we don't close them as a recurring customer on the first contact, it only counts them as a one-time, so I have to go back and double-check what the actual percentage of recurring sales is later. But our software tracks it at whether it was a one-time sale or a recurring sale on the first contact or the first attempt to sell them. Otherwise, we have to keep a kind of a spreadsheet and track whether how many of those converted down the road. But 26% is our number now. But 1 in 4 would be fine with me for the volume of leads that we get.
Sure. Thank you. I knew people were probably thinking that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Might be low for some people, but that's based on the way we do business.
Well, and it's different for everyone. Like I can say too, like ours is, we're a power washing company. We're right at about, we fluctuate between 42 and 46%. So like, that's where we like to keep our close rate. But as far as, you know, company, it's all based upon location. It's based upon what type of clientele you're looking for. It's based upon your prices. I mean, it's a bunch of different things that come into play when you're looking at close rate. So it's not just like, here's a lead, did you close it? Like if you're comparing, you know, Matt and I, we're two totally different businesses, two totally different types of price points. So of course our lead closures are going to be a little bit different. So always make sure you're comparing those to someone in your local industry who I like to say it's kind of close in the same price range. Like if you're looking to like compare competitive numbers, or, you know, even if it's a friend across the country, that's a similar type of market, then that'll be yield a little bit better of advice. But try not to compare apples to oranges as best you can, because it'll just continue to frustrate you.
I'll throw something out here that's going to probably blow some people's minds. We raised our one-time clean rate to $65 an hour during COVID. And our close rate has not declined on one-time leads. Wow. So we're still at like 50 to 55 for recurring service. But the way we treat it is that our rate is $65 an hour. That's what we sell. That's what we tell anyone. If they ask us what our rate is, we say $65 an hour, but we give you a 25% discount, or 20%, somewhere between 20 and 25% discount if you sign up for recurring service. So, I mean, we basically during COVID were like, well, we can't hire people. We can't, you know, fill slots out for 2 weeks. Well, let's kind of narrow that down a little bit by raising prices. And we're still booking out 2 weeks out with that kind of price range. And I think the biggest challenge is still people, right? So for every 10 weekly slots that I sell, right? So the way I look at it is that 10 cleanings in a week, right? If you fill 10 spots, that's a little more than one person. It's really closer to 9. By the time you do vacations and everything else, but like the equivalent of 9 weekly cleanings scheduled on your board is a employee. Well, we're selling about 10 weekly slots, which is, you know, if you use a point system or whatnot, but it's about 20 recurring customers, give or take, per month right now. And we need to hire one person. That's our biggest bottleneck. It's not selling again. It's not getting customers, even with way increased prices during COVID. It is hiring people. So
I kind of want to jump in here, because I think we're like, this is all really good stuff. And I wasn't sure where we were going to take this conversation, because you are very well versed with your numbers, Matt, and you're very well versed in your finances. And that has come through over the past year that we've gotten to know each other a little bit better. I wanted to talk to you about this coming out of COVID discussion, like what's changing, what's different. And I think you just started in a couple of really interesting places. Martha and I just got back from the Quality Driven Conference, and you're not alone. There are a lot of companies that are still recovering and kind of, you know, not licking their wounds, but, you know, when we run a P&L and we look at 2020 compared to 2019, it's still hurting, right? And when we run our 2021 year-to-date P&L compared to 2020, it's still hurting. So I love that you raised your prices during COVID. I think that if you've not done that, we're seeing inflation, guys. First time in a long time, we're seeing significant inflation. So that's critical. But I'm curious what other things you've changed. Like, so for Jeff, my husband, Jeff, for him, it was like everything was kind of fine. And then COVID hit and he got a chance to fix the things that had been annoying him, right? The things that he would have never, they weren't technically broken, but it was a good opportunity to fix it. So it sounds like for you, raising that one-time clean was one thing. What's, maybe give us two more adjustments you've made to your business after 13 years of business out of COVID.
On a lot, but I'll focus on one big one. Was we went to solos because it's more profitable. So I focused on the bottom line during COVID more than the top line, because I couldn't control the top line number as much, but I could certainly control the bottom line. So I went from 16 cars with solos. We sold a bunch off during COVID while people were paying crazy prices for cars. Cause people just, I don't know what the deal was with cars, but I was able to sell cars for crazy money. So I went down from 16 to 6 cars and made a lot of money on each car that we sold. But solos can produce more revenue. So you get a better return on human capital from solo cleaners in our industry. I still have 5 teams typically in a day, but I have 15 to 18 solos on the board on any given day, and they can produce on average about 20% more revenue per day than when you pair them up with teams. So that's a big piece of the puzzle, and that allows me to pay my people more. So we raised our base pay to 14, and I'm gonna probably raise it to 15 because we're still very profitable even with the higher floor. Because we're still kind of a hybrid commission structure.
Can we pause for a second? Can you tell us what minimum wage is in your area so that other people, because I'm in California.
It's Missouri. It's probably, it's either federal minimum wage or it's either St. Louis minimum wage, which is 9.
So you're paying $5 an hour more for starting base pay.
Yeah. And honestly, I think we can afford to go closer to 15. And I think the Costco announcement of 16 is going to really push that number up. You know, Amazon hired, what, 200,000 people during the recession? You know, even if it's part-time work at $15 an hour, that's what we're all competing against. So the fact that I'm a dollar an hour below Amazon is problematic. I need to actually really consider, you know, okay, we're only able to hire so much. What do I need to do to compete with these other companies? Even if they're just paying, you know, Target, it's all a little disingenuous, you know, like we can argue that, but it still looks good on paper to say $15 an hour. If you can afford it, it's time. Anyway, so solos was a big piece of it. Moving to a more distributed workforce. So we had key boxes full of keys, like four big boxes full of keys, 700 recurring customers with over half of them having keys, gave all their keys back. We bought lock boxes at our expense, sent those lock boxes to their houses. A lot of people were like, well, that's expensive. Yeah, but I mean, the amount of time and energy of employees having to come to the office and collect keys and managing that stuff and then pulling those keys in the morning, we took hours off of my management's time per week to apply towards other things. And we also took all this drive time coming to the office away. Our employees only have to come to the office one day a week now. So again, they start their jobs at the customer's house, which saves, again, more productivity. I have solos sometimes doing three houses a day. You know, if you think about that, I have teams that can barely pull four houses down, right? So if I have solos pulling three houses down, almost $400, pretty commonly, and doing a great job, and our scores all keep up. So a lot of the changes we've made revolve around moving to solos, increasing productivity, decreasing expenses, and just overall focusing on profitability over top line, you know, focusing what we could control.
I love it. I mean, there were so many nuggets in that. Just quick little summary. I heard you were looking at labor efficiency. I heard you were looking at your base pay. I heard that you were reevaluating your pay structure for your career ladder. I heard you totally rejecting this idea of revenue is for vanity, right? You were totally looking at your profitability because that was something you could control. All of that is really, really helpful. Martha just threw something on here that I think we should have you respond to, Matt. Do you think that you could still win against Amazon because of hours? I hear a lot of employees are unhappy working for Amazon. I always go back to Martha's response with Cody Owens when she was just absolutely ruthless about targeting Amazon employees, and I loved that. but yeah, Matt.
It's physically challenging. It's, you know, you're not getting enough hours, but they don't know that when they're looking at jobs. I mean, so you still have to catch their eye. I'm not saying that I know we're a better place to work than Amazon. I know our culture is better. I know that that's all better, but you still have to attract them and get those applications in and get them in your funnel. And I could talk about hiring this whole time about how we really slowed down our hiring process and really made some incredible
changes. I'm gonna let you pause that for Martha, cause I know she's going to get really excited. Martha's like, wait, no, me hiring. I do want to just throw in a quick commentary. I think Michelle's refreshing. She's still having some internet trouble. A quick commentary about minimum wage. So the House passed last week that 15 per hour would be the goal for minimum wage. It looks like that did not make it into the Senate package that's being voted on Wednesday. So that is my little bit of political government update about minimum wage. But I think Matt's right. Looking at it on paper and figuring out a way to communicate the culture and the value, and I'm going to stop talking so Martha doesn't give me the hook, and I'm going to pass you over to Michelle. Thank you, Matt, for sharing those great nuggets. Michelle's going to talk to you about your systems in your business.
Yeah, so being remotely located from your business, is that accurate? You have an office, home office that you work from? Yeah,
I mean, I live two blocks from my job, but I still never come here. I own a house two blocks away, and okay. I still don't come here more than once a week just to check in with managers. I usually still Zoom in and meet them remotely, even though I live right down the street.
I love it.
I mean, you know, for the size business that we have a very small office. It's 1,100 square feet. I think Martha's visited before, I think, or maybe it's been, if she has, it's been a few years, but it's the same place that we had. We got this office in 2010, and we've painted it, put in new floors, and done a few things, but I've always been a believer in that your office space does not produce revenue. So you don't want to invest a ton of money. Office is a vanity, you know, oftentimes. So anyway, I where were you going with it? I want to make sure. But again, I work from home, but I live really close.
Okay. I was going to communication. So communicating with your team, you have a lot of dispersed people. How do you as an owner communicate to everyone? What is your kind of, do you have a monthly meeting? Do you have a weekly meeting? How does that work exactly?
So we haven't had any meetings since COVID. What I do typically is weekly, I create a video using QuickTime or my phone, and then I upload it to YouTube as an unlisted video, so I can have the link that I can share. And then we used our broadcast software to text that to the text with the link to the video, and then also usually a synopsis of all the main bullet points. So even if they don't watch it, there's at least a synopsis of all the bullet points that the video covers. And then safety meetings, we still do weekly like that. And then they have to confirm that they have watched whatever safety material that we've put out every week. So we do require confirmation on the safety ones. If they don't want to watch my videos, that's fine. I just gave a video last week where we gave like some of our employees up to $3,000 bonuses. If they don't want to watch that, that's fine. Wow. You know? So, but usually when I'm communicating, positive stuff. Anything from me is not going to be like I leave all like the anything that needs to be structurally or like, you know, any kind of hard messages that comes from management. I just do straight up leadership or like positive things, you know. And if I have to meet with an employee one on one, it's usually a bad situation. But, you know, I deliver that stuff in person. I don't do any of that via the communications that I put out.
And you said it's a broadcast system. What are you using to kind of get the word out there to your team?
It's in our software for Made Central. It's part of the you can text or email through it. But everyone, if you don't use that, I think you could look at setting up. You could just set up a text chain for all that it matters. Like, keep it simple. You don't even need to switch software. You don't need to do anything. Put all your texts on a broadcast text and just send something to them. It doesn't require any specialized software. Text messaging is where most of our employees live on their phone. So some way that you can get a hold of them on their phone where they don't have to dig it, where it sends them a notification right to their face. So that's why I like text messaging, because they're going to see that. They're going to read it. I suggest just putting them all in a text message thread. And then as employees leave, remove them. There's other things you could do, but you don't have to spend money on it to do it. Just you need to be consistent with how you do it. That's all.
That's absolutely true. Tell us, what is the one piece of technology other than Made Central that you can't live without in your business for those that are listening?
There's it's not necessarily a piece of technology as much as it is a piece of equipment now. So we invested in on-site generation of our chemicals during COVID. So we bought, because we could write this off with the PPP money, the thing we bought was a hypochlorous acid and sodium hydroxide generator. So water, salt, electricity, we can produce all of the clean solutions that we need. About $11,000 investment. So that might not be in the starter range for some businesses. However, we use about, you know, pre-COVID, we were using about $1,500 of chemicals a month. So we figured it's already paid for itself in chemical supply costs. Martha, do you know what your chemical costs are? Would something like that? You're probably, it'd be harder for you because they don't have a place they can come refill. But
So we buy concentrate, and we're able to keep our chemical costs I'm trying to think. It's very low, our concentrate. It's under 1%. I know that much, just for chemicals, you know.
Yeah, but 1% would be about $2,000 a month. So, you know, that's you know, again, even if we use that 1%, I was going to use that 1%.
Exactly.
Most people use 1%. So when we were doing about $200,000 a month, well, 1% would be that $2,000 a month. We were a little below that typically. But again, great product. It is hypochlorous acid is a chemical we produce in our own bodies to fight infection. It's very effective, and it's EPA certified sanitizer and disinfectant when we produce it from our own machine. Now, I can't sell it or do anything like that. I don't have a EPA registration to sell it, but some people do. You could actually create a whole other business and get an EPA certification to be an on-site generator and produce it, sell it. And if you look at what hypochlorous acid sells for per gallon, you might think about it. I mean, it sells for probably $30 a gallon online. So,
wow. You know. I love it. I love it. That's a great piece of invite of news. I think that Matt Green last week or 2 weeks ago when Matt was on, he would have absolutely started a second business with that. Awesome. Thank you so much, Matt, for joining us. I'm going to pass you on to Martha.
All right. And then I'm asking you about recruiting because that's what everyone wants to know. Dominique Williams did a presentation at the QDS conference and he had some golden nuggets regarding like Indeed and stuff. But one thing I know about Matt is always looking for a better way. You know, he's very much a researcher and you just use a lot of logic-based solution. I'm not saying it right, but Matt, I notice we have a lot of people watching and chiming in today, and it's because everybody is like me, who's like, you're the guy to watch because you really do a lot of research, and you know you're.
I learned from other smart people and listen. So that's.
I know, and I feel the same way. But I remember coming to visit you, and you had all those phones, and you know you were doing all this stuff. And I know you don't now, but
no more $2,000 a month phone bills either. That's.
But you know what? I know. You're the same. We learn a lot by the things we try and go, no, that is not necessary. But so recruiting. Let's talk recruiting.
Yeah. We've really lengthened the funnel. So as opposite as it sounds, like when you're really trying to hire people, we've made it harder for them to get on with us by adding some steps. So I'll kind of just walk through it and I'll tell you the end result first, and then I'll kind of walk through the steps. So right now, over 50% of the people we hire make it 30 days. It's actually 75% for the last 6 months, but I'll just say 50% for the last year. So COVID really kind of threw a wrench in it. But if I use the last 6 months, 75% make it 30 days. Well, historically that was 25%. So we've really gotten that number up. And so right now, over 50% that we hire have made it that we've hired in the last 6 months are still with us. And really, like looking back a year, it's still that 50% number still holds. So we did a really good job of hiring the right people and then reducing turnover on the front end by getting them to opt out before they even show up. Mm-hmm. So kind of the process is. We're hiring and posting ads on Indeed and Craigslist and Facebook. Those are our three sources, and we're spending quite a bit of money on those to make hires right now. Applications come in on those sources, but then we ask them to fill out our full application. It's not a massive application, but we're asking them to take a step versus just sending us their resume, right? So they take a step. If we like their application, we then send them an invitation to interview. Again, this is all done through the computer, through our HR software, where it sends them the next step and it moves them along a little line and it says they've been invited to interview. They have to take the next step and schedule that on Aerie, my hiring manager's schedule. They have to make an appointment with her to interview. It's all done online via Google Meet. Unique Google Meet is generated through that software a unique ID. So it doesn't get clogged up if like 10 people show up on some weird time. They all have their own unique ID created and they need to show up for their interview at the time that's scheduled. That's their first kind of little test. Right. If Aerie likes them and wants to take the next step, she sends them a opinion survey. So you're familiar with the Orion. We still use it. We're using it out of order, but we're only sending it now to the people that we like. And again, I don't really care so much about the results. I want to make sure that they're not going to say that they're going to steal on the job or they're going to be high risk for some attitudes that are dangerous and cause us some work comp injuries, we still look at it. But what I'm really looking at is, will they bother? Will they bother to take this next step?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. They do. Then after that, if they've taken that next step, then Ari follows up with them with a phone call, asks them a few more follow-up questions to make sure before she offers them a job. We don't actually see them in person at this point. She offers them a job after kind of a little second interview on the phone, you know, offers them a job. At that point, they get a onboarding packet from our system. If they accept the job, they have to fill out all their paperwork, but not just their paperwork. We have 12 hours of onboarding that they get paid for if they complete it and show up for their first day of work.
Wow.
So they have to do all these videos. Again, this self-selects some people out. They're not going to try this, right? So only half of the people that accept job offers show up. So that's where that turnover decreased, is they're not bothering to do the training, right? They're just saying, I don't really feel like this. But you know how many people show up the first day and then they're like, oh, this isn't for me. They can look at the onboarding process, not even do it. You know, we don't even look at whether they do it or not if they don't show up the first day. We don't even look at it until they show up the day they're scheduled. And then we just verify that it's all done, because we've had people show up and they haven't done the stuff and we're like, had to send them home, which is unfortunate. And then we discontinue the process because they didn't follow the instructions. But it's all laid out. Like, video from the first video is just how to complete this onboarding. You know, we actually created a very step-by-step process. And then once they do that, then they have 2 weeks of structured training with one of our two trainers. And I suggest you always have a couple of people that are dedicated to that. I think I learned a lot from Martha on training, and I can always get better on this. And so 2 weeks of dedicated training with they stay with the same trainer, and then they get another additional week of solo training with two additional trainers that are focused on if they're going to be on the solo teams, how to be solo. So almost 4 weeks of training before they're really officially out there on their own, or three to 4 weeks. I think sometimes we let people go off solo training after 1 week if they're just rocking it.
Yeah, I love that. And I bet Megan is kind of doing the same thing I am, that we run online courses and you can see how much people have completed in those courses and stuff. And I was thinking, oh yeah, I mean, that can be like
it's a commitment product
or something. So I like it. I like it a lot.
Can I ask a question real quick? Sorry to bug you or interject, but I'm wondering if you have any statistics about after the 30 days. So with my husband's Jeff's company, which is a window cleaning company, we've been a little hesitant to do too much education up front, because they're applying for an outdoor job and a very physical job, and that's what they're excited about. So we don't have them do the videos before they come, but I'm just wondering if you've seen an impact on like their enthusiasm for the job that they applied for. And also, if you invest 4 weeks of time in training, which is a crazy amount of time and investment, if you're seeing them stick longer or if they're falling off after the 30 days. So sorry to interject, but I'm just dying to know.
It definitely is a longer, I mean, if you historically look at it, just as an example, 3 years ago, I had 180 W-2s for a company with about 40 to 50 employees, 180. Last year, I had like 72. Obviously COVID changed things or whatever, but, yeah, I mean, drastic reduction in turnover. On my board here, I've got 17 out of my 29 cleaning techs. I'm really low on cleaning techs right now. So pre-COVID, we were about 40, but 17 of them have been with me for a year or longer. And if I were to count back through the rest, I probably got about four more that are about to push up on a year. So I don't have to hire as many people when people stick around. That's the other thing people forget, is if your staff sticks, you don't have to be in this constant hiring like crisis mode. If you're always turning over, you know, your long-term employees, you know, and long-term in our business is probably a year or more, right? If you're always turning them over, then you're going to have to spend more on marketing. You're going to be in this crisis mode more, and you're going to make worse hires. So I think we're making better hires because we were able to stick with this scary process, because it is scary, because you're going to hire one person a week. That's it. Like, you know, sometimes we can hire four people in a week sometimes in the old days. And then we were just like, well, if one of them makes it to Friday, right? If one of these people lasts till Friday, we're okay. But we don't do that anymore. And it's paying off in, it's just so much less of a stressful way to hire. And, the only stress that I have now is sometimes I'll go a week and we didn't hire one person. I'll be like, ooh, like, you know, like yeah. We really need to net one new employee every month, guys. And like, that's my conversation now. And I know we have some job offers out there, but, it's tight right now. And I feel like there's a lot of political reasons. There's a lot of still reasons people are hanging out on the sidelines. I'm hopeful that this goes away, but every time that I get hopeful about it, I see some new regulation change where I'm like, oh, that's just going to make it a little tougher.
The next package that's getting voted on Wednesday has 400 a week. So we're at 300 right now. We're going to 400. The 300 was supposed to expire mid-March, and they're going to extend it with an extra $100 a week. So sorry to be the bearer of bad news, but I read that this morning. Now, we don't know if it's going to go through. And even if the Senate passes it, it's got to go back to the House. And the House really wanted the minimum wage. So it will be interesting how this all plays out. But
yeah, there's a lot structurally that is making it difficult.
Several people are asking what's in the 12 hours. And before you answer that, I just want to say, you guys, it's not so much about what's in that 12 hours as it is that it is seeing how excited and interested people are in the job. So they've interviewed, they have a better feel for, you know, your company culture. So they're making a decision in their head whether, yeah, I liked what they had to say or I didn't. And then this is kind of, more than anything, it's a litmus test, you know? It's a high requirement litmus test to see how interested they are. But Matt, if there's anything you want to share about, you know, what's in there.
So not to be, you know, salesy, but I created that PHC cleaning with Tom and Liz and Joe Walsh. And so I actually own that content. So I use a lot of that content in my training. It's a little dry at some point. So, but again, it's not about, it's more of just a commitment check to me. And again, I am creating more knowledgeable, experienced technicians. We're really pushing on ARCSI to lower the price of PHC or else it's again, $99 a seat sometimes is hard. Cause I think a lot of people are afraid to spend any money on upfront on their technicians. Cause they're like, well, if they're not going to show up or whatever. So I get that. So, I don't have any control over it. If it was my say with ARCSI, I would make that like, you know, $99 a month, all you could eat, or $200 a month, all you could eat, all the training you could give your people, and really encourage our industry to train their people more. And, I think the outcomes are better when you do. If not, get a video camera and just record your operations. Where do you park? Right? Where do you put, you know, your supplies at the end of the day? Just make some quick videos on just basic operation stuff. Where's the bathroom? Who do I talk to when I have an HR question? And introduce those people. Like, it's just simple stuff like that. Again, most of ours were shot with an iPhone and just quickly edited on the phone, actually. Just the iPhone.
Right. Well, you know how we all do is we get hung up on the details and it being just right. Instead of, you guys, if you're listening to that and thinking, this is such a great idea, get something. I mean, even if you get an hour or two up there, and then you've already started that litmus test and you've already doing more than you're doing today. So you know, I just want to say, quit worrying about, well, is it exactly like Matt's, or is it, you know, just get something out there, see what works, doesn't work, and keep tweaking it. But
we
really start, you do nothing.
We added some videos from LinkedIn Learning, like it used to be lynda.com. I needed some quick and dirty customer service videos and some leadership training videos. And I just stole some. I mean, I didn't steal them, but I'm paying for them. But I incorporated them into my training program. And they're not about window cleaning. They're not about field service, but it worked. And it was really nice. Dom is like chomping at the bit. He wants to buy your 12 hours, Matt. So if you guys can broker a side deal here, Dom says, I have to read his comment. He wants to buy it. He wants to know what's in it. And Dom, I think it's hilarious.
So one other quick thing as far as some content that's actually free. Your whoever you have your work comp company has probably a library of videos for you to use for your safety trainings and things like that. Don't take that. Don't sleep on that stuff either, because we have our California sexual harassment training built into our system. That takes up actually a good chunk of time. And that's probably required where Megan is now. I think it's
more than 10 employees.
Yeah. What is it?
More than 10 employees, then it's required. And it's annual.
Yeah. So we do that. And actually, we don't have it set up as annual because it's not required here. But we do it on the front end because I'm like, anything that's in California tends to trickle down to the rest of the country at some point.
Eventually.
Eventually, yeah. Like eventually, whatever California does, we're gonna feel the rest of the country. So your insurance companies are a great place to look and see if they have a video library of content that they would be happy for you to use, because you're gonna reduce your work comp injuries. Again, you know, that's a big thing is using stuff that's out there that's free, that's already available to you without having to reinvent the wheel, as Martha said.
Right, right. That's a great comment, because that's already out there. And, you know, I just think that we all get caught in that cycle of, oh, I want to do that. And it just seems like too big of a project. So then 6 months later, you're like, yeah, I meant to do that. And so just get something up there. And I'm going to take your comments about, I know my workers' comp provider has things in there that I've used for staff meetings, but I love that idea. And we think alike in that a lot of people think I need a volume of people on the books, you know, and I need a volume of people. I don't, because it is, and Matt, you don't either, in that, I mean, yes, we want a volume, but volume does not mean quality. No. And those people can cost you so much money, not just the training, but sometimes you let people come in that are gonna file an OSHA complaint. Ooh. Go ahead.
Yeah. People, dude, bad hires have cost me hundreds of thousands of dollars in work comp and car accidents. If I were to total up the cost of a bad hire, I mean, you can still have this stuff even when you do your best. But I mean, think about somebody who comes in and immediately has a slip and fall injury
within
a week, or gets into a car accident. I mean, these people you could have weeded out. Believe it or not, those people are people you probably, if you were not in a hurry to hire, would not have been hired anyway. You made a bad choice. You went too fast. And I can think of some specifics.
I think Tay's looking this right now. Tay's in the midst of her first bad hire, and she's not having fun, I don't think.
Okay, this is a live and learn situation, unfortunately. I mean, hopefully you're doing more learning and less living, you know, since you're at the start of that. But man, I had a bad hire years ago that first day or two had a slip and fall that of course was staged. Never had any issues until we let her go. And then, man, did she start filing every single thing. And I think back to that, and that person would have never done the work. I mean, especially if you could watch a progress bar and know if they did the work, she would have never done the work. And so that would have been my litmus test. I could have said, no, I'm sorry. You know, so I love it.
I want to cover one thing on this for anybody that's listening. EPLI coverage is employer labor practices insurance. I highly recommend it, but our EPLI cover company came in and did an audit on us and helped us with some of this a few years back. So sometimes, I mean, your insurance companies are a great resource, and it's a little scary to have some insurance company come in and tell you, hey, do this, do that. But they helped us make some decisions that was very valuable, and is probably, you know, again, it's in their benefit because they don't want to be paying out lawsuits for us, you know, getting, you know, sued for discrimination cases, things like that. So, but they also came in and said, put a stairwell, put a handrail here. And that wasn't even related to EPLI coverage. But I mean, you know, having those resources is probably a, you know, something that's worthwhile. And that's, you know, maybe it's $1,000 a year if you're a $1 million company to have EPLI coverage. I would highly recommend looking at that.
Every year my EPLI comes up for renewal, I'm like, my deductible is $25,000 on my EPLI policy. But if you think about it, I've spent $25,000 on legal fees more than once protecting myself against employees in California. So that's a good point. Samantha has a quick question that I just want to mention. I don't know if you're going to have an answer because I don't have a good answer off the top of my head. But she asks, curious about the having them learning before they've started and not paying them for the time if they no-show. So like when you offer the job, and then you start the training, that's paid training. But if they never show up to work on the first day, how do you deal with that?
In Missouri, it's fine. I don't know what it is in your area. But so it's contingent on you showing up for the first day. So it's all pre-employment. And again, I don't even look at what they did until they show up the first day. We don't even track anything. We don't look at any of it until they show up. And then we just verify that it's done. So in Missouri, it's fine. And again, Missouri is about, I mean, we're the South of the Midwest. I mean, like it's pretty similar labor laws.
Oklahoma too.
California, none of us are labor law attorneys, but in California, I would recommend just documenting the heck out of it. Yeah. You know, if you can't get them to show up to collect a check, I think technically you're supposed to mail it to them. But I'm not a labor law attorney, and I would just say document, or do business in a more clear-friendly way.
Again, if it's Sam Snyder, she's in Arizona, I would again check with your local state. But I verified this with my attorney first in Missouri. And again, so if you're in Missouri, don't take it as law either. Again, your attorney might give you a different interpretation. But from my conversation with my guys, they felt comfortable that the way we were doing it was fine. Again, that's why I have EPLI insurance too. So if I have to protect myself, at least I'll have, you know, them to go after that. And, you know, we'll be able to get a settlement and I'll, you know, make a quick change to what I'm doing. My deductible is not as high as yours. It's only 5,000, but it's still, you know, at $400 an hour, it can go pretty quick.
Well, and you never know. You're like, is this going to be a $1,000 problem or is this going to be like a $10,000 problem? And then I don't usually know till I'm like 15 grand and I'm like, I should do the deductible, but yeah. Or I just need a better EPLI policy. Okay. Yeah. Sorry.
All right. Well, that was lots of great stuff. Thank you so much, Matt.
Yeah, thank you, Matt.
Matt has always been so willing. You like education, right? You like to help others. You like to educate. But I also know you don't like to put up with the nonsense. Like when you share things and then people don't do them and then or argue that doesn't work. You know, that doesn't work in my area. We're different.
Yeah. Right. There was a point where I was making almost $10,000 a month coaching and I gave it all up because I was like, this is like really challenging to not see people succeed that I'm putting a lot of time and energy into. And it was more the mental anguish. I'm like, you're just not putting any activity in, like you just like, you're not doing the activities that we're talking about. And then we're talking about the same thing next month. It was just not for me. So even though I could make a six figure income coaching, I'm like, it's not where I want to put my energy and time. And so, you know, God bless you guys. You guys are great educators, but also I don't believe any ideas that I have are all that original. I don't think like, that's why I'm willing to share. It's like, I'm learning from other people and I'm just trying to distill that information as I see fit. And I love helping people where I can and giving information that's valuable and insightful. But, you know, most people just aren't going to execute. So if you're a person that's going to execute, then that's the real value of information is execution.
Yeah.
It's perfect for our quote of the week. But I don't think I do a quote of the week yet. So Michelle delegated to me, but I think we do homework first, right? And then we do quote of the week. Okay, good.
All right. I'm excited. Just to review homework for everyone, Matt, you can feel free to give homework as well. What we do is we'll go around and give homework based upon our topics and don't feel compelled to do all four or five pieces of these homework. Sometimes they can be a little bit more in depth depending on the topic. So choose one that is going to be the area that you can move the needle forward in your business. And like Matt just said, choose to execute this week. So for marketing, what we're going to do is we talked a lot about making that decision to go ahead and jump into lead generation based marketing. So before you decide to make that official decision, I want you to take a look at your sales process and really evaluate if you're ready to handle the lead flow that's going to come in from the marketing company that you may be hiring or the marketing that you may be doing yourself. Because if you're not able to handle that lead flow, you're in turn just throwing money into the wind. So that's my challenge for you this week, is to one, make that decision on lead flow marketing, and two, figure out what capacity you really can handle from that.
Tay, I missed you so much. I feel like we've been in sync for a couple of weeks now, and I really missed you last week because my homework is very related to Tay's homework. And I love it. We didn't even talk about this ahead of time. So it is March 2nd, which means we were in our final month of the first quarter of a new year. Remember the year that was recovering from the dumpster fire year? Okay, so we're in our final month of the first quarter of 2021. And I'm going to challenge you to pull a Matt Ricketts. Yep, I'm going to just call it a Matt Ricketts. So if your goal for first quarter was a revenue goal, I would like you to scratch it. I would like you to turn it around and make it a net income goal or a net percentage goal. And I'd like you to look really hard at that, because Matt, I think you gave us some really good advice. Your net income is something that you can control. Your sales is sometimes something you can't control. And Tay's pointed out there's, you know, this lead slippage problem, or like if you can't do a good transition from marketing to sales. But there's another comment that Martha and Matt were saying, if you can't staff those sales, then you can't earn that income. So I'm encouraging you to look at your first quarter goals. And if you do not have first quarter goals, then I guess that's step one, make first quarter goals. But they should not be revenue tied. They should be net income tied. And we get really distracted by those shiny vanity metrics of revenue. But let's pull a Matt Ricketts and look at our bottom line. For that, we still have 29 days in first quarter. You can make a difference in your business.
Awesome. And I'm going to pull a Matt Ricketts and say that you can have a training system that is all you can eat. I love that term. I don't usually hear that term when we talk about business, all you can eat. But we went to Trainual for our company because they were charging us per seat for Trainual. And I went back to them and negotiated an annual all you can eat contract with them. So it is possible to go to some of these software platforms and say, I don't want to pay per seat, because like Matt, you know, we lose a few people in the very beginning as well. And we've already put them through the training and paid for it. So I'm going to put a link onto Trainual. But if you have a CRM or an LMN, they're called a learning management system, LMS. If you have a learning management system, go to them and negotiate something for 2021. Everybody's up for having a really good client instead of not, you know, maybe losing you if you can't afford it per seat. So I'm going to put a link to Trainual. That's the one we use. But there's a lot of them out there, and I might add a couple more for everybody to check out for getting your training digitally organized for this year. That's my homework.
Okay. And I'm going to pull a Matt Ricketts. And I am going to tell you to look at your funnel, look at your hiring funnel. And I think most of us tend to look at it as, how can our hiring funnel get us people hired? But I want you to look at that funnel in, how can this funnel work for you to get not only people hired, but only the people who are going to stick, or at least have a high probability? You know, you all have heard me talk about in training, that's my goal in training is, yes, teach them the procedures, but my goal in training is to weed out anybody that shouldn't be there. And that should be your goal in recruiting, is to make sure that you're sifting through the yuck, you know, sifting through the people who are going to cause you problems. And just think, I mean, I know I look at it this way. Every time I hire somebody and they don't stick, that, especially during COVID, that is a hit with our customers, because it's not good for our customers to see this revolving door, because they're going to worry about what's going on behind the scenes that's running people out. And, you know, it may be all perfectly legitimate and there's nothing to worry about, but see it through your customers' eyes. So make sure you're getting these good quality people to show up. All right, Matt, you have any homework?
Yeah, so actually something I learned from you was to be remarkable first before you work on your marketing. Be a five-star business before, you know, that's something you can control first before you start spending money on marketing and driving people to your door. Build a five-star business. Like, you know what your customers think of you. Spend some money on Martha's product or whatever you want to use and get your customer sentiment. Know that you're kicking butt every day. Make sure your operations support that, because operations drive marketing more than the other way around. Like, you can drive all this money to your business, but if you're not running a remarkable business, something that is something that your customers are going to be thrilled with, right? So I remember having a conversation, we were in Las Vegas and we were talking about, like, you know, similarities in our businesses. And I remember her talking about, you know, you have to be remarkable first before you can, you know, because, like, I was talking about marketing. And she's like, yeah, but you got to be remarkable first. So I remember that, like, being like, you know, so instead of saying marketing, remarkable, like, what are you doing different? What are you doing exceptional and setting yourself apart? And, you know, if you don't know the answer to that, if you don't know what your customers think of you, you can spend a lot of money to find out the wrong thing. So that would be my first bit of advice that kind of came through from some early conversations with Martha probably 7 or 8 years ago.
I take it back. Go ahead.
It's Megan was talking about this last week. I think it's very, when you know that you have a 98% satisfaction rate, or you know your quality score is, you know, 4.9 out of 5 or whatever, when you know those things, then you know that you don't have to haggle on prices. You know that you don't have to beg people to work. You know, it's like there's a newfound confidence of kind of a your loss, you know. So I like that.
Yeah,
I like it.
I'm gonna ditch, Martha's gonna kill me. I'm gonna ditch the quote of the week that I found earlier, and we're gonna do a Matt Ricketts and we're gonna quote Martha Woodward this week. So
yeah.
Build a remarkable business before you start marketing your business. And that quote comes from Martha Woodward, our very own genius. Thanks, Matt, for sharing that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll be back next week, Tuesday at 7 a.m. Pacific, 10 a.m. Eastern.
Yep.
And Matt, it looks like there's a few questions that we didn't answer. If you have time.
I got a minute.
If you can go in there and... And I think it's going to be easy to just go in and
sure. Where are we at?
Like, I don't know if your name, your marketing. Oh, they want to know about the hiring funnel.
Yeah, I use Paycor for my HR. Which, again, there's a million HR platforms out there, and I'm not recommending Paycor because their customer service lacks, but they have a great product. Like, they have great tools. But if you ever want to get someone on the phone, they're awful. So I bear with them because they have amazing tools, but man, do they stink. Paylocity is a better company. I'm sure that Megan would probably be able to tell you a few others, but again, I use Paycor, and I'm not recommending them for the sheer fact that their customer service is not great, but their tools are amazing. So if you're a very technologically driven person like me that can figure out all their crap, great. If you're not, stay away. Otherwise, you will be like on support calls your whole life. And they don't have like a queue, like where like they'll call you back. You have to actually stay on the phone. It's the worst. So again.
And Colin, we just signed up for HireWho. Pretty amazing automations in the recruiting process.
Yeah. I mean, smart guy that started that company. I thought he was on here earlier, but yeah, he's you know, you're talking about him. It was Desmond's company, right?
Dom's.
Oh, Dominique. Yeah. Yes, Dom's. He's a smart guy, and I love talking to him about what he's doing. So yeah, check that out. You don't have to have anything, you know, crazy. And then, but I think the real key to it is what Michelle was talking about, is having some training after you hire them too. So, you know, I love that idea of like an all you can eat with Trainual. I really looked at Tranual. I really wanted to make, what's the Augusto work for me, but mm-hmm. I couldn't make it work because of our, because of the way we do our retirement plans and things like that. So I just, I love their customer service though. So for most of you, Gusto would be awesome. And then there's tools that integrate with Gusto, like find stuff that actually works with Gusto. Mm-hmm. I'm just so established and we're doing some things a certain way that it was too challenging to switch them. But I would recommend Gusto for you if you don't have a retirement plan, you don't have health insurance, like you don't have all these things already that you don't want to switch, and you're willing to use their tools. Gusto is amazing.
Gusto does have some retirement plans now.
They have guidelines, but they're only offering 401k. And we just switched all of our health insurance and life insurance and all that brokerage over to Gusto. And I agree, Matt, it's been a little painful. It would have been much easier to start in the Gusto environment. But having it all integrated is amazing. It's really helpful. And they have some cool.
And good customers. I mean, they actually like pick up their phone.
They do.
And if you need help getting a hold of somebody in Gusto, I have some really awesome people in the back end. So
I think Megan can get you a little bit of a break, right? You like for your customers or something like that.
Yeah. And I'm a gold partner or something. So I don't take any commissions from Gusto, but I share 15% discounts to your fees. So, but that only works for new Gusto customers, not for existing ones. But if you ever get stuck, reach out. We've got some secret ninjas hiding behind the scenes at Gusto. So.
Well, this was a great one. Thank you so much, Matt. Right.
Thank you, guys.
Great. And sorry you had to come into your office.
No, they were cleaning my house today, so I wanted.
Hardship.
Yeah, normally Angela and I go on like a long walk, so we'll like leave our house and go like 5 or 6 miles, and then come back, and they're usually done. So I just decided to forgo my walk this morning and come on in.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right.
All right.
Exciting.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Connect with Fight Club for Business. Join our Facebook group where we have weekly homework, accountabilities, and an awesome community to help you fight for your business. Facebook.com/Fight Club 4, as in the number 4, business. Fight Club for Business.